It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. Thank you for joining us, as always, on this, the week of Martin Luther King Day, or, as Fox News describes it, Black Monday. Or as Donald Trump, I think, describes it, Shithole Monday. That's right, because this is Martin Luther King week, we will be talking in this show about race. Because this week also happens to be the one-year anniversary of Donald Trump's becoming the destructor-in-chief. We will also be talking about racism. Also a little bit on Trump's physical and shutting down the government. Anyway, let's start off. We'll leave the best stuff in reserve. Let's start off talking about Trump's physical, which unfortunately they will not be able to release the results of his physical because it turns out his health is being audited. And as long as his health is being audited, they will not be able to turn over the results of the physical. But that's okay, they will release a synopsis of the physical. And what's not to trust with the synopsis of the physical? Yes, the White House, Trump's White House doctor, came out and said that Trump was in great shape, notwithstanding all the ways that we all know that he's not in great shape. Especially, he points out, cognitively, the president did amazingly on his cognitive test, with the possible exception of some anal warts, but still, other than that, his cognitive test was great. I'll give you a moment to figure that joke out and let it sink in. Anyway, once again, even with his health, Donald Trump and this administration cannot help lying about everything. And the White House position came out, if he came out at all, and lied about Trump's health. How well he did on the cognitive tests, who the hell knows? But the fact that they told us he did well, of course, is no reason in any way, shape, or form to believe that he actually did well. Interestingly, the doctor, some funny things with the doctor, Ronnie Jackson's description of Donald Trump's health. The first was, the first tweet that came out from that doctor that said, president's in tip-top shape. Turns out, maybe the doctor should be going through some kind of a cognitive test of his own, because he apparently forgot how to spell his own name. I know this is just kind of funny, except when one figures that maybe the doctor had nothing to do with that tweet from the doctor's name. And the incompetence in that administration, whoever tweeted a fine report from the doctor, couldn't even get the guy's name right. But then the guy comes out and says perfect health is going to last forever. This is pointed out by some reporters. We know he's not in perfect health. We're happy to hear that apparently those bone spurs that kept him out of Vietnam are no longer a problem. But all those other health problems that we knew of are still there. Regardless of whether or not he is 1 pound away from being obese and thus gets to avoid being put in that category.
Is that convenient?
It's a little convenient, isn't it? 1 pound away. Lucky Donald. But of course, after the weigh-in, he went to go eat some more ice cream. Presumably. Okay, so there is not Trump's health. But anyway, shutting down the government. Here we are talking now about, once again, whether the government is going to be shut down and who's going to be blamed for it, what the Democrats should do about it. I guess this is a pretty good way also to celebrate the one-year anniversary of Trump's taking over the government. Shut it down. We were having a discussion before here amongst the FNR staff as to what the Democrats should do. We're not having it here alone. Everybody pretty much is having this discussion. What should the Democrats do here? If the Republicans are willing to work out some kind of a deal to extend DACA and to extend the child health program, CHIP, should the Democrats give Donald Trump his fucking border wall, wasting billions of dollars on that garbage? A lot of people have been arguing, what the hell, Democrats? We waste a lot of money on our government anyway. Give Trump his stupid victory with the wall. Get what's necessary. We're the people who believe in government, and therefore we don't want to shut it down. My producer, among others, makes a very compelling case. I think he's inspired a little bit by something we talked about last week, which is Senator Dianne Feinstein basically giving the middle finger to the Republicans on the Intelligence Committee and releasing in full the testimony of Glenn Simpson and Fusion GPS. He's excited by the fact that Democrats showed a little backbone. And he argues that as a political tactic, the Democrats shouldn't give in to this shit. Donald Trump promised the wall. He also promised that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. He told us, running for president, that we were not going to pay for this folly. And we should be holding him to his promise and not giving him this victory by funding the wall. A lot of the question comes down to not only who will suffer and what will come out, how much suffering will we have to go through, but politically, who's going to pay the price on this one? The Republicans own every aspect of our government. They have a majority in both houses of the United States Congress. If they let the government shut down, they're going to blame it on Dems, and they're going to have millions and millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars of right-wing bullshit money helping them do that. But ultimately, Damien has a pretty strong case that most people in this country will know who to blame if the government shuts down. And maybe that gives the Democrats a little bit of bargaining power. What can't be lost in this discussion is what they are fighting for, because there are a lot of false equivalences being made out there at this point. It's important to remember that Trump is holding out for a fucking wall that is a waste of money, a destruction of the environment, won't do anything, and is an affront to American values. The Republicans, in order to get that wall, are holding hostage to something that the Democrats really want: health care for children. Let's not equate those two things. And yes, we have a hostage situation. Republicans are holding our children hostage to build the wall. Here we have a way to demonstrate this. Okay? Nice little child you got there. It would be a shame if something happened to it. Okay? Better give in to the wall, Democrats. Okay? We just really wanted to use the props, actually, on this one. I just really wanted to use the props. First of all, plastic knife, I understand, but that's our budget. Second of all, the bear. The sad part of this story is I actually just had this in my office ready to be used. But here's where we are, holding children hostage for something that we don't need to keep foreigners out. Well, speaking of keeping foreigners out, and potentially brown-skinned foreigners, let's get into our big discussion this week on race with another edition of Brave Republican Watch. Yes, Brave Republican Watch, we're going to start with Senators Tom Cotton and David Perdue, who raced to the defense of the President of the United States after he uttered those famous words of shithole countries, referring to Haiti and African countries. In other words, black countries. Shithole countries. Senator Cotton and Perdue initially came out with a strong defense of the president. We do not recall the president saying these comments specifically. Oh, we get chills up and down our spines with how they have rushed to his defense. We can call that the Dick Cheney defense, after Vice President Cheney, who turned "I do not recall" into an art form. We've talked about this on this show before. Dick Cheney, at one point, when talking to the FBI about the outing of an undercover CIA agent whose husband had come out and informed the American public that the Bush administration was lying to them. And then the Bush administration outed her, represented in the movie Fair Game, which probably none of you have watched, but is worth a view. Vice President Cheney, in his interview by the FBI, said, I do not recall 72 times. I do not recall is the way you avoid a perjury rap, by lying. Because if you say it didn't happen, that could be proven wrong. If you say you do not recall, well, who could prove that you recall? I do not recall taking a knife to the throat of a teddy bear. It may have happened. I don't recall. That's the way you lie to get out of it without committing perjury. You've added to that the saying these comments specifically part of that. And what they're doing is obviously lying. But that's okay. Those lies weren't good enough. They didn't do the job because it turns out some of the Republicans weren't playing ball and were admitting to the fact that the president had said that. What he obviously said. So they had to double down on the lying. I guess the CIA directorship was dangled in front of Tom Cotton, and I don't know, maybe chicken shit was dangled in front of Purdue. Whatever, but all of a sudden, they did recall. And they did recall he didn't say it. Let's talk for a moment about how memory works. That's not how memory works. If you don't recall something, and then later on, you recall it vividly, you don't recall it. You recall filling in the blanks and making shit up. Now, this is, of course, assuming that they're telling the truth, which, of course, they're not. So even if they're telling the truth and they don't recall, and then later they say, no, he didn't say that, they're full of shit. Their memory is not believable. But in any event, of course, they did recall, and they're lying. And that's a different story. So bald-faced lying is now the norm in America. And we're going to have to talk about this every week. That we're going to say, the President of the United States came out and lied. Now senators are lying. His chief of staff, who had a sterling reputation for his integrity, is now lying. Don't even get me started on the huckster. It's normal now for senators to look in the eye of their constituents, of the American voter, and just fucking lie. Just lie. Tell a bald-faced lie. This is now okay. This is where we've come as a country. This is what happens when the president lies at least 5 times a day and gets away with it. This becomes acceptable. It's not just senators. We've now got Kirstjen Nielsen, the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, coming out publicly and saying, in case you missed this, I don't recall. I don't recall him saying that. I do know there was some tough talk, though. That's right. So when my kid's elementary school teacher comes and says, your kid was using profanity in class and that's inappropriate. I don't know where the hell he would have learned that shit from. But when your kid uses profanity in class, I'm going to say, no. He was just talking tough. Because that's what my kids do. They talk tough. What kind of crap is this? And then, of course, if you watch any of her testimony, she equivocated like hell, wouldn't answer a goddamn question. So now, the Secretary of Homeland Security is full of shit. At least the good news is Trump now feels it's important enough to lie about. One of the reasons that we're all so sure that he said it is, A, it's the kind of thing he would have said, and B, it took him a full day to even deny it. Until then, he thought his base would love him for it. But then he found out that they weren't real happy with the use of the S word. And so he came out and denied it a day or so later. Now I understand, I was just informed right before the show, that Tom Cotton has come out with a new one to try to make him look something like something other than a complete lying sack of shit. Which is, well, maybe he said shit house countries, and that's why I was confused. Whatever, Tom. Good luck heading the CIA. So, what do we make of Donald Trump's shithole countries comment? The first thing I want to talk about very briefly is all the coverage of the shithole countries comment. And that is focusing on the fact that he used the word shit. Really? That's who we are. We're really that fucking stupid as a country? We're that useless that we can't even consider the substance of something so offensive? What offends us is the particular combination of letters? That's what's offensive? I give the New York Times credit. They put shit. They let Paul Krugman's column run with shit in it without taking it out. Is that even a curse word anymore?
If the president says it,
it can't be a curse word anymore.
Yeah,
so that's pretty well defined in curse words out of existence. We've gone from George Carlin's 7 words you can't say on radio to 6 words you can't say on radio to, oh, fuck it, say whatever the hell you want because the president does it. But the problem is not the combination of letters. And really, small-minded people need to get beyond that. I guess it's wonderful that we found an area where some evangelicals are going to draw the line. Child molestation didn't bother them. Child sexual assault was fine as long as we got the vote. But gosh darn it, you better not use that word shit. That would be bad. Really? That's not the issue. Maybe the issue is the racism. Now that's a bigger issue. The question being raised is the president a racist? Another question being raised is the Pope Catholic? Does that bear poop in the woods? Was Hitler an anti-Semite? Is Trump a racist? Of course he's a racist. How are we having this discussion? He's clearly a racist. He's obviously a racist. Then we could have a long discussion about what that means.
Yeah, but didn't he say that he's the least racist?
He said he's the least racist. But then he said, what did he say after that?
That you've ever interviewed.
He said the least racist person, but then he said, believe me. Okay? Believe me is Donald Trump's trigger word, like I don't recall, for I'm full of shit now. When Donald Trump says, believe me, you could be pretty sure it's the opposite of what he's saying.
Overcompensating.
Kind of like overcompensating. It's small hands thing, maybe. Kind of like when someone starts a sentence with, to be honest with you, or frankly, no, it's even worse than that. Because sometimes when people start a sentence with, to be honest with you, they're actually being honest with you. It's just all the other times, apparently, they're not being honest with you. I don't know. Is Trump a racist? Come on. The guy can't call out white supremacists. The guy basks in the support of white supremacists. Cultivates the support of white supremacists. Trump has become a racist chant by white supremacists. Instead of the N-word, they just say Trump over and over again. It gets the message across. He has a history in his real estate business of discriminating against black people and other people of color. He gained political prominence a few years ago, became a darling of the brain-dead sect of the Republican Party by attacking the president, who just happened to be black, and attacking him in ways that just happened to dwell on his blackness. Not a true American, not a real president, not an American, not born in America. Racist code words. His immigration policy, building a border wall to Mexico when there's more immigration coming from Canada. His discussions of Mexicans. His pardoning of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, a man who probably has a racist tattoo on his ass, maybe his forearm, who is the quintessential racist. His speaking for the execution of the Central Park Five people of color, wrongly arrested and convicted of a crime they did not commit. His calling for their execution after they were exonerated. That's racist. His father's association with the KKK. All right, let's not visit the sins of the father on the son, who, after all, came from Sweden. But let's not stop with the president of the United States being a racist, because that misses the much bigger point. And that is, his political party is racist. And let's not forget that. It's not Trump deviating from the Republican script. It is the Republican script. And if Trump is deviating from it, it's only because he's not speaking in dog whistles. He's actually speaking racism. This has been a long time Republican phenomenon. William F. Buckley, the founder of the modern conservative movement and therefore the modern Republican Party, the, if you will, intellectual leading light of conservatism. In 1957, the white community in the South is entitled to take such measures as are necessary to prevail politically and culturally in areas in which it does not predominate numerically. Apartheid. For the time being, it is the advanced race. Okay, you say, 1957 was a long time ago. Okay, let's move a little further along in history. Richard Nixon and his Southern strategy. Was Richard Nixon a racist? Here are a couple things Richard Nixon says. I have the greatest affection for them, referring to African Americans, but I know they ain't going to make it for 500 years. They aren't. You know it too. Now the Mexicans are a different cup of tea. They have a heritage, which I guess makes them a liberal in the current Republican Party. But at the present time, they steal, they're dishonest, they do a lot of other things. They do have some concept of family life, at least. They don't live like a bunch of dogs, which the Negroes do live like. Who could call that guy a racist? Oh, also Richard Nixon. This is on White House tape, so this isn't subject to discussion. There's no do not recall here. There are times when an abortion is necessary. I know that. When you have a black and a white, or a rape. Okay, still in the 1970s, but let's understand the Southern strategy and its legacy today. For 100 years after the Civil War, Republicans couldn't get elected dog catcher in most of the South. Why is that? This is going to surprise some of you, but not Donald Trump. Abraham Lincoln was a Republican. Abraham Lincoln was a Republican president, and he freed the slaves. And the South wouldn't forgive the Republicans for that for 100 years. So the racist politicians in the South were all Democrats, making for an interesting political divide in this country. But then the Republicans had the idea how they could take over the South. And that was when President Lyndon Johnson signed the landmark 1964 Civil Rights Act. The Republicans said, it's our time now. Now we can convince our voters in the South, or the voters in the South, that it's the Democrats who are the party of black people, who are the anti-racist political party. And that was and remains the Southern strategy to maintain the hold of the South. And it is much of the reason why the Republicans have maintained the South. But that's still, that's a long time ago. Most of my viewers weren't alive when Richard Nixon was president, or probably even alive. There's Ronald Reagan, hero of the Republican Party, who kicked off his presidential campaign with a campaign stop in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Philadelphia, Mississippi, where it just so happens, and this was all a coincidence, of course, three civil rights workers, two of whom were associated with my institution, Queens College, one of whom was a student here, went down, were fighting for civil rights, and were murdered. Ronald Reagan decided to kick off his political campaign there. When Strom Thurmond ran for president, Mississippians voted for him. We're proud of it. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years either. A little context. Strom Thurmond was a racist Democrat who ran for president in 1948 on a segregationist platform, because it turns out the Democratic Party was not racist enough for him. He ran for segregation. That was his one issue candidacy in 1948. When Mississippians proudly voted for him. The person who said that was the Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott, the Republican from Mississippi, speaking out in favor of segregation in the year 2002. Ultimately, when there was an outcry over this, the Republicans had to take Lott out of leadership. A few years later, he was the minority leader because the Republicans had lost the Senate, but he was back in leadership. How about this comment? There are those who contend that it does not benefit African Americans to get them into the University of Texas, where they do not do well, as opposed to having them go to a less advanced school, a slower track school, where they do well. That's in the 2010s. All of my viewers, I'm willing to bet, were not only alive, but conscious and aware and educated for that one. That was the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, another hero of the Republican Party. We're still talking about taking down Confederate statues to scum. To scumbags trying to rip the country apart on the basis of keeping people down on the basis of their race. The Republican hopeful for governor of Virginia, Ed Gillespie, was running ads about taking down Confederate monuments. Monuments to evil racists. Monuments to people like Nathan Bedford Forrest, one of the original founders of the KKK, who, among other things I recently read, was responsible for slaughtering surrendering troops, just murdering them, many of them black. These are the people we should be building monuments to and leaving them up. We're rolling back the civil rights movement through legal challenges. Shelby County v. Holder, we've talked about at length, basically eviscerating the Voting Rights Act. And voting itself? What about voting rights? This is in Shelby County. What about the Interstate Voter Registration Cross-Check Program, which is a fancy-sounding name for stopping blacks from voting? How about caging, which we talked about a little bit last week or the week before? The case being considered by the United States Supreme Court out of Ohio, where Republicans look primarily in black districts to send postcards to people who neglected to vote in the last election so that they could strike them from the voter rolls. More than 50% of Ohio voters don't vote in any particular two-year cycle, and 70% don't return the notices. So they know that they're striking voters who are duly registered, legitimate voters. Let me see. Sweden prepares to send pamphlets to 5 million Swedish homes that they may be preparing for war against Russia's aggressive posturing in the Baltics. This is breaking news here. I'm being handed breaking news. We've never done this before. I'm not even sure how to do this. Sweden prepares to send pamphlets to 5 million Swedish homes. I think that's mostly white people, right? Yeah, like Norway. I think it's white people. That they may be preparing for war against Russia's aggressive posturing in the Baltics. Okay, somebody's dealing with the Russia crisis at least. We have Steve Bannon trying not to testify, but we will come back to this issue, of course, on Russia's voting next week, on the whole Russia scandal next week. Here's what the Republicans' argument is. Okay, Nixon, here's a quote from one of his advisors. Nixon designed his campaign to allow a potential supporter to avoid admitting to himself that he was attracted by the racist appeal. And so the Republicans' defense to racism comes down to, we're not racist. We're just appealing to racists. Our voters are racist. Now let me be careful here because I get this blowback sometimes in my classes. I am not saying that everyone who votes Republican is a racist. Although there's a pretty strong argument that if you're supporting Trump right now, you're really probably a racist. What I'm saying is, without a big turnout in the racist vote, Republicans do not win elections. And the Republicans know this. And so they might argue, as they do in the gerrymandering case, this isn't to stop black people from voting because of racism. This is to stop Democrats from voting so we can win elections. And that's okay. So far, the Supreme Court has said that's okay. That's what they're deciding now. As LBJ had pointed out in the 1960s, if you can convince the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pocket. Hell, give him somebody to look down on, and he'll empty his pockets for you. That was 50 years ago. And it is the most succinct and best definition of the Republican Party today that we have. Diversions. The wealthy, the Trump, his friends, his family, the people who fund right-wing media, the Kochs, the Mercers, are stealing from this country. They are impoverishing us and destroying our future for their own selfish gain. And how do you do that? You have to convince a lot of people that it's black people they need to hate. So in a way, it almost doesn't matter whether the Republicans and Trump are racist. What is clear is that they are making racist appeals. They are clearly engaging in racist practices to win elections. And that is not good for the country. As we see 7-Eleven workers getting arrested and thrown out of the country. We think about the crime that Republicans seem to care about and the crime they don't. And they seem to care about crime committed by colored people and not white people. The war on drugs has changed dramatically because it's white people using drugs. Our focus on crime, lack of bail, getting people out of jails, locking them up in jails, is racist. We feed this with this whole white victimology appeal. Grab a Trump supporter, and it's 99% or more certain that he's going to talk about how unfortunate it is to be white in America. This bullshit comes from somewhere. And it is appealing to a racism while it allows the average Trump supporter to say, I'm not a racist. The controversial Times article about the white supremacist who seemed so normal and argues, I'm not a racist, and can believe that. Because it's white people who are the victim. This is the whole point of Fox News. Convince people that there's an other out to get them so the rich people can still steal from them. Why does this thinking matter, though? Why does it matter if they are racists? Because it affects what we do in the future. It affects our decisions on health care. If we think it's black people and we don't like black people, we're not going to provide health care. It affects CHIP. Medicaid, immigration. Race pervades every discussion we have in this country. The Roy Moore rally where he waves his gun. Black politician couldn't do that, probably get shot. Stand your ground laws and the perhaps death knell of affirmative action. All premised on racist appeals under cover of something other than that. Think about racism. The next time we read more about the rise of fascism worldwide, including in Germany. What could go wrong? I'm informed by my producer, Damien, that we have a listener question that we'd like to get to now before we finish the show.
Yeah, and the question was also mentioned from someone who said that it's amazing with the racism that we even have to talk about this now. But the question that we have is unrelated. And about Sweden, we're going to watch that as it develops. So the question comes from Nicholas in Queens. And his question is, given that an estimated half of the forces in Afghanistan are paid mercenaries who probably want the war to continue so they can make a profit, do you think that we should stay in Afghanistan to win the war and stabilize the region, or do you think we should leave until we promise only to use our own troops?
I think if we can win the war and stabilize the region, I think we should be doing that. I think the problem with Afghanistan is it's become pretty clear at this point that we're not winning the war and we're not stabilizing the region? And that, I think, becomes a $64,000 question. I think you've got two issues with regard to our foreign policy regarding Afghanistan, Iraq, all these other places. Of course, we're talking about Iran and scrapping the nuclear agreement. And one of the things that many of us have learned over the last couple of decades is, as much as we'd like to believe that the United States gets to stomp its feet and get whatever it wants, and I'm speaking to you now, President Trump, the fact is we've learned that the United States can stomp its feet all it wants, and it, despite being the world's sole superpower, it doesn't get what it wants. That we lose a lot of the time, or we don't win a lot of the time. And that changes the question dramatically. How much are we willing to sacrifice in Afghanistan in order to win is one question. How much we are willing to continue to sacrifice in Afghanistan in order to continue to play to a draw is a completely different question that requires a completely different answer. And I suppose that puts me in mind of the famous John Kerry comment, you know, that fake war hero. The famous John Kerry comment when he testified in front of Congress after coming back from Vietnam with his three Purple Hearts. How do you ask someone to be the last man to die for a mistake? And I think that's really the big question here. Now, the idea of using private armies, it is kind of remarkable how much we spend on our military and how much more we're going to be spending, and yet we don't seem to have enough soldiers. We need to use private soldiers, many of whom had been, of course, employed by Betsy DeVos's brother-in-law, Eric Prince. And thus, we keep going round in circles, and the money train keeps on chugging. That's as well as I can do, I think, with that question, because that is a question that is a whole show in and of itself. So anyway, that's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Like Looking Forward, go to forwardnationradio.com. That's forwardnationradio.com. And get the full experience. You'll see the video from this in every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. Don't forget to like it, to watch us on Podbean, and hopefully coming soon on iTunes. Please spread the word, share our links, share the message with your friends, family members, anyone who you think would be interested. Like us on Facebook, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.